Breaking today on Seculo, Canada in chaos following Trudeau resignation.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. Logan and Will are in the studio with me. That's at 1-800-684-3110. And to think that, you know, it's just U.S. politics that's wild. No, let's move to our neighbors to the north. Remember, just after President Trump's election, you had Justin Trudeau make his way down to Mar-a-Lago before the holidays, I think, kicked in. And
immediately.
He was there for a couple of days at least and meeting with the president. And there was some interesting commentary from President Trump after that about buying Canada and
the 51st state.
Him being the governor, but really just being tough on the imports from Canada, the price differences in medication, things like that. And knowing that, again, we're allies, but that we want to make sure that there's parity there between the trade deals and issues like that. But now we've learned, and then finally, and you know, it may be to a lot of Americans get to this point where you're like, I don't even know how this happened, but like it finally did happen, that Justin Trudeau's party has pushed him out as prime minister, and it triggers a different time than like in the United States. When you're used to a system like ours, which is a democratic republic, let's say the president is pushed out, you have a vice president. And if you had a leader in the legislative branch pushed out, well, you have a number two put in place. Yeah. There, interestingly enough, the government kind of shuts down.
Yeah, it seems like they're going to be in sort of recess for the next 3 months.
They're already in a sabbatical, as they call it. So the parliament wasn't coming back until later in this month. However, they have now suspended the parliament until March 24th to allow for the Liberal Party, which is technically the coalition leading party, to choose a new leader. So they'll have to do some voting on that. But then the Conservative Party has already mentioned and said that they are going to immediately do a no confidence vote as soon as they come back in March. So after they get a new Liberal leader, which will be the prime minister at least for a very short time, they will then have a no confidence vote in parliament, which can trigger new elections. Their deadline for elections was October of this year, but after this move by Trudeau, it does seem like we're looking for springtime elections in Canada. Right as President Trump's agenda starts rolling, there may be a friendlier party to the north to help maybe negotiate on some of these issues that have been such a concern for President Trump.
Well, I think that people have gotten used to a very leftist-run Canada and Justin Trudeau with a lot of PC, you know, politically correct policies, a lot of woke policies that he's tried to put into force there, a lot of anti-free speech policies. Remember the truckers, remember the fact that they were seizing bank accounts. We'll get into some of these activities. You might forget that before Trudeau, there was a pretty big conservative movement in Canada. It's not quite exactly the same as when you'd say conservative movement in the United States. Maybe a little bit more similar to the UK's conservative movement, but I'd say in the sense that in this hemisphere, it's still a little, it's somewhere in between the US and the UK's. It's a little more conservative than the UK, too.
A little more social. Yes,
exactly. And so the question is, do they have the people to put forward to actually take charge here? Now, what is interesting is this, is it more chaos for the Trump administration to face, or is this showing the power of the Trump administration? I think it's a little bit of both, but honestly, Donald Trump right now is having great influence around the world without even being the president of the United States.
Right, I mean, Trudeau was the belle of the ball for how many years? He was, you know, everyone's favorite, you know, especially in the liberal side. He was like the guidepost of the North. Everyone was like, look, I wish we had a leader like Trudeau, and look what happens. Look what happens when these kind of things go down. Phone lines are open for you, 1-800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. We also want to welcome everyone watching. We are now live on the Salem News Channel. We've been on the network for the last year, but now we are live. So if you're watching right now on the Salem News Channel, I want you to give me a call. 1-800-684-3110, because we are live right now. What are your thoughts on this issue? And we're also going to be talking about some of President Trump's issues that happened over the weekend. We'll be right back.
Seculo. We are taking your calls too, 1-800-684-3110. So in Canada, the power of President Trump, who has said he wants to get tough on our neighbors, including those to the north and the south, that we're not just talking about, you know, border wall with Mexico, that we're also talking about trade policies with Canada and getting more parity when it comes to the economics of what flows in and what flows out. We know that Justin Trudeau went down and met with President Trump after he was reelected, spent time down in Mar-a-Lago. So it doesn't seem like this was something, you know, 6 weeks ago that he was necessarily planning to do. But clearly, in a sign from his own party and his own advisors, and I would guess the grassroots in Canada to some extent inside that party, made it clear to him that he was going to have a very tough time keeping a governing coalition together. So instead of losing, he has decided to resign. And I think that there's probably a lot of people wondering right now, fairly, because we don't cover Canadian politics that much in the United States at all. I mean, it doesn't really matter what's a lot of the things that you know, I think the truckers issue was one of the biggest issues here during the free speech kind of COVID years.
It's not that, I mean, we have all the networks on. It's not even a story right now they're all talking about. And this has happened in the last 45 minutes.
Right.
So it does show you we are oddly disconnected from what's happening so close to us.
Yes. And I mean, I'll go to Harry Hutch on this because, Harry, I think that what people probably would want to understand first is how does this affect the United States in the short term and the long term?
That's an excellent question. But first, let me say that Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was one of the most narcissistic leaders since Emperor Nero, and he has finally resigned. In point of fact, he was never an inevitable leader. Instead, he was a choice made by the Canadian people to choose someone who supports diversity, equity, and inclusion. Those were his policies. This is a guy that bowed at the Black Lives Matter protests. This is a guy that protested against non-existent deaths at Catholic schools. So he was always a weak leader. But I think one of the things that this particular resignation points out to the American people is the world reacts to strength. And Donald Trump projects it, and I think Trudeau could not withstand the pressure from the United States, but also from the Canadian people. Keep in mind that only 16% of the Canadian people supported Trudeau. Only 16%. So he was in a losing battle. His deputy prime minister, Chrystia Freeland, she resigned a couple of weeks ago. So he was in a very, very weak position, made weaker by Donald Trump.
What do you think comes next? I mean, because, again, people in the United States are not many experts in Canadian politics. So is he doing this to try and save the Liberal Party? Are they still the strongest party to keep that kind of parliamentary power inside Canada where they'd put forward the prime minister? Is there a chance that some of these other parties now have between now and I think March to be able to put someone forward and actually change the politics, the political direction of Canada?
Very good question. So first, what has to happen is there has to be a no confidence vote, which would then trigger an election. More likely than not, the Progressive Conservatives would win that election if you look at the current poll results. But it's also important to keep in mind that the Progressive Conservative leader is not necessarily a paragon of conservatism, at least from an American perspective. He is a paragon of conservatism from a Canadian perspective. Canadians tend to be much more liberal, much more socially focused. And so I think at the end of the day, you are likely to see a change in Canadian policy, but it will be a relatively soft change as opposed to a hard right move, such as what we have seen in Hungary or Slovakia or previously in Poland.
Yeah, so this isn't like a MAGA movement happening in Canada right now. This is more specific, more tied into this person.
Absolutely. And it's important to keep in mind that the primary news source in Canada is not necessarily the Canadian news. It's CNN. Mm-hmm. It's MSNBC. And so when I have spent time with my in-laws in Canada, they are incessantly talking about what's going on those particular channels, rather than actually looking, for instance, at Fox News or the global news, which comes from Great Britain.
Yeah, I mean, look, in London last week, there was more Donald Trump headlines than there were anything else. And there was a lot going on in their own country. But clearly still, America has its hold on the news across the country, across the world. But again, this happens in Canada. And we're all kind of struggling, going, okay, how does this all work? How do we put this all together? And y'all got me a great little fact sheet of all the little things that Trudeau has done or is doing. And I'm going, okay, I got to get more educated on what's happening right around us.
Well, and Professor Hutchison, what you brought up also is that the leader of that conservative party, the Progressive Conservative Party, as it's sometimes called as well, but they are currently Pierre Poilievre, which is the best I'll do at my French pronunciation here.
Brilliant.
But he's been making headlines on American social media a lot because of his kind of blunt, matter-of-fact way he's dealt with the press. I feel like he's got a lot of that Trump no-nonsense about him, so he's kind of become a superstar on American social media. But he's described as a populist. He's focused on cost of living. The social issues, as you bring up, wouldn't necessarily be in line as much with American conservatism. But when you talk about things like the tariff fight ahead that President Trump was threatening Justin Trudeau with, this does seem to be a person that could probably, especially focusing on those issues of cost of living. He obviously was very upset with the free speech issues as well when Justin Trudeau enacted those Emergency Act issues back in the COVID era. He does seem like someone that a Trump-style politician could work well with to maybe get around some of these things, which would be beneficial for both the Canadians as well as the Americans if negotiations can happen without the specter of Mr. Liberal Trudeau, who was put on every pedestal possible by the American elites.
I think you're precisely correct. So if you look at Pierre Poilievre, he's essentially a Mitt Romney on social issues. But I think on economic issues, he's quite good. If you were looking for a Canadian who is more in the style of Donald Trump, you would have to look at someone who's even more obscure, and that is Grant Abraham, who is the head of the United Party, which is now a small but very extremely conservative party in Canada, particularly in Western Canada. So one of the things that I think the Americans need to think about is to break Canada up into regions. And so if you look at Alberta and to some extent Manitoba, they tend to be much more conservative than Ontario and British Columbia. British Columbia local politics are left of the moon, for instance. One of the problems with Canada, dealing with Canada, is that there are a number of left-wing loons in politics in that particular country.
Let's quickly take a phone call. Let's go to John, who's calling on this topic. John on line two, watching on YouTube. Welcome.
Oh, hi. Thank you. I'm happy to see, in my opinion, the changeover of leadership in Canada. It seems to me that this has affected some of our politics here in a light way, whether that be the prior controversy with Jordan Peterson, where he was unfairly, in my opinion at least, unjustly deplatformed.
Right.
And like many were.
A lot of his positions there, yep.
But the most concerning thing to me is Parliament has noticed a large mess with the funds they manage, apparently, within that party. And I think Trudeau's responsible, even if I'm not going to say it's his fault. And it's time for a change. looking forward to it.
Well, and that's right. That's even why the finance minister stepped aside. There was that fight. She, Trudeau was saying you can be demoted, and she just resigned, which also lessened his coalition and put him even more in a more tenuous situation. But I do think that if conservatives get in there, they will be looking at how the money was managed in Canada, because it's been a disaster.
Absolutely. So the current projected budget deficit in Canada is about $61 billion, which is 50% higher than the projections earlier. So the finances in Canada are a mess. They need to cut back on taxes and healthcare expenses.
All right, folks, we're taking your calls. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We filed cases in federal and state courts to stop the radical left, which it's continuing with these political-based prosecutions. We're now ready to file again. We haven't gotten to this yet, but with President Trump in New York, Logan.
Yeah, that's right. You can take action as well. Sign our petition right now to defend the Constitution and stop political prosecutions. That is at aclj.org/sign, S-I-G-N. Do that right now or scan the QR code on your screen. We'll be right back.
All right, so on this Friday, January 10th, Judge Vershawn in New York has said he will go forward in the sentencing of President Trump. This is the Alvin Bragg case where President Trump was found guilty of those 34 felonies mixed in somehow with a federal election law. It was all a mess. And he, you know, even the DA there said, well, maybe we just say, you know, we can't move forward, or this is where we stopped. But he's come up with a different idea, which is that we're going to sentence him, but the sentencing will not have any, there won't be any kind of actual sentence that comes with it, other than the fact that you will, for the rest of your life, be a convicted felon. And that is, I think, exactly what the left wants here. Is they want to be able to say this is the first president in history who is entering the Oval Office as a convicted felon. So President Trump has announced he's going to take action before Friday to try and prevent this sentencing from Judge Vershawn. And then ultimately, I think he's going to continue to fight this. I mean, this was a weak case to begin with. I think that everyone realized this case on appeal probably had a lot of trouble ultimately because of the way they tried to create the hush money payments into election law. They're not really allowed to enforce federal election law. That's not their job as local DAs. But Vershawn came up with his way to where he can, quote, sentence President Trump without actually sentencing him to anything. So again, proving our point that all of this is not about actually punishing anyone. It's about tarring and feathering people. And it's about making you look like you are a felon. It's giving the ability for the other side, whenever they feel like throwing it out there, that you're a convicted felon and that we don't really trust you. But the American people, of course, knew all of this, and he won an overwhelming election. So I think this is gamesmanship, which is what's so wrong with our legal system in this country. The fact that he's going to do this sentencing on these 34 counts, but don't worry, it's not going to come with any conditions. Yeah. It's not going to be any kind of actual sentencing whatsoever. No jail time, but nothing. It's going to be unconditional release.
It's always a show, and it's always backfires. It always becomes something that's not. I don't know why they keep continuing on this. I did think about this. Was President Trump not allowed to vote in this election as a convicted felon?
There, one, because the sentencing had not come down, he was not a convicted felon. Also, he's a resident of Florida. Florida has a lot of rules as far as if you're a felon in a different state versus Florida. It was convoluted. He was able to vote in this election. But back to Jordan's point as well, Judge Vershawn set the sentencing for Friday, 10 days before the inauguration of President Trump.
Yeah, and certification's about to happen in the next few hours.
Right. This is where the fight was going on between Alvin Bragg trying to say, hey, do the Alabama rule, which we don't do here in New York, which is where you declare him dead and still enter the judgment. And President Trump wanted the whole case thrown out. This is what Judge Vershawn said in his order, saying that we will have sentencing on Friday. In balancing the aforementioned considerations, meaning like the presidential immunity and things of that nature, in conjunction with the underlying concerns of presidential immunity doctrine, A sentence of an unconditional discharge appears to be the most viable solution to ensure finality and allow the defendant to pursue his appellate options. So he's trying to look like he's a fair judge, saying, I'm not going to fine him. The unconditional discharge would just be like, you're a convicted felon, no other penalties or punishments, go along your way, and you can appeal this then. He's trying to make it look like he's being fair to the president by saying, now he can go appeal this, now he can go get it overturned. But in reality, as you mentioned, Jordan, it's just trying to put that stain of convicted felon on the incoming president of the United States before he is sworn in on January 20th. And President Trump also has filed this morning saying, hey, scrap that on Friday because we've appealed your immunity ruling already at the appeals court. So you should be putting all these proceedings on pause. The person who would make this decision based off that filing by President Trump would be Judge Mershon. The fact he already decided to schedule this on Friday, I don't think you're going to change his mind at that point. But the president's legal team is still fighting these issues very actively.
Yeah, let's go ahead and take a phone call. Let's go to Bill, who's calling in Wyoming on line one. You can call in to 1-800-684-3110. And again, I wanted to welcome everyone who's watching on Salem News Channel. We are live. This is our first day being live on Salem News Channel. And if you're watching, I'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. Of course, if you're watching or listening anywhere else, you can call in as well. But make sure to tell our phone screeners that you're watching on Salem News Channel. Thank you for having us. All right, Bill, in Wyoming, you're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. If I was emailing anybody, I think I would be putting a large LOL on this because I think that they just created a wonderful statue and have applied gold leafing to the top of it.
Well, I think, listen, I mean, ultimately here, when you're talking about the situation with President Trump is, listen, they tried to use lawfare to take down President Trump. It didn't work. Other people, I'm not so sure, could have withstood this kind of barrage legally. And I say it for two reasons. One, he's particularly tough and tested. He's already been president of the United States. He's built up a huge support base. Number two, you saw kind of the parity between him and Joe Biden, whose family was also under these criminal investigations. And let me tell you something, those criminal investigations made a lot more sense to the American people about why they were being looked at, because it was, you know, the Hunter Biden stuff. And it just seemed it was easier to connect in your head than a unknown election law federally that was somehow tied to a business records law in New York that somehow together took a misdemeanor to a felony. That's a much tougher leap for people to take. And the second part is this. If you're on the right, we've been preaching this idea of the court systems being weaponized and used, and we call it lawfare. And we've really made the example of President Trump and some of those who surrounded him as kind of like the first time true lawfare came to the United States of America, not just through political fights like impeachment, but actual state court systems and federal court systems. And we were able to see President Trump really wear these as part of a badge of honor. Is that if they're going to go after me here, 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 and here, it's because they're so scared of what I can do politically. They're so scared of me coming back into office, because if I can do this, even with all of these stains and distractions, it shows that we'll be able to get a lot of my policies in place. And that's what they're truly afraid of on the left, is that President Trump's policies are more important to the American people than personality. And that it wasn't an election based off, oh, who do you think's nicer and a person that's, you know, a nicer person to be around. That's not how people want to elect the president of the United States. They want to elect who's tougher, who's been through the ringer the most, and comes out and can still run our country at a time when we've got a couple of wars going on, yep, threats of other conflicts. I think that you put all that together and you realize, listen, are they ever going to stop coming for President Trump? I don't think so. I think he's got a couple more years of this probably in his own presidency. They might stop after that, because you start then getting towards the next Republican president of the United States. It's not going to be him. But in these first 2 years, this is still going to be a time where we have to be on guard and ready to fight every step of the way, because we have not put in place any of the cabinet members yet.
That's right. And you can sign a petition to get involved right now. All you need to do is go to aclj.org/sign. Help stop political prosecution. Be a part of it right now. aclj.org/sign. We're at 150,000 plus signatures. We'd love to get that to 200,000. Be a part of it right now. Again, phone lines are open. We got a second half hour coming up, so you can get us on your local station. Find us broadcasting live right now on aclj.org, on all your favorite social media platforms, and as of today, Salem News Channel. We'll be right back with the second half hour coming up.
Keeping you informed and engaged now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. The election being certified today. Listen, we are preparing for the new president of the United States. It's interesting what moves we're seeing around the world as we prepare the United States for an inauguration. There's a lot of new state leaders coming in. I was with the next Attorney General of West Virginia. They get sworn in a week before, so a lot of state leaders too to work with here at the ACLJ. And then the President of the United States and the Vice President will be sworn in. Hearings are already going to start taking place on cabinet members this week, and that will, I think, get a lot of attention. Some of those hearings will be very kind of blah. They probably won't get as much attention. That doesn't mean that those jobs, by the way, aren't just as important. In fact, I mean, one of the biggest jobs out there probably is Secretary of State, but I don't see Rubio having a real difficult confirmation hearing. There may be issues where he disagrees with other senators on that he'll talk about that, but the fieriness of it.
Yeah,
I don't really imagine that's going to be, it's going to be more about, you know, what do you think are the issues you've got to face right now? And I think basically if you pay attention to foreign policy at all in the United States, you know what those issues are. The second is it's going to be the Tulsi Gabbard types. They've decided they want to go to war with her, and it's not just the Democrats.
Right.
We're going to have to work on a campaign we've already started to put together on the right as well to make sure Republicans know that we support Tulsi Gabbard in this position because the Director of National Intelligence needs to be someone who's not afraid to stand up to these intelligence agencies and tell the president the truth. That's ultimately what we care about, is getting the truth to the president and ultimately making sure they're not overclassifying documents so that the American people are always in the dark about what the government that we pay for with our tax dollars is actually doing.
Well, and Jordan, when you look at what happened last week, even with the terror attack in New Orleans, where the FBI said they had no intelligence about this person, when he had chemicals within his home that were not a type of IED bomb that had been used in America or Europe yet. It was only a Middle East style bomb. But yet they had no intel on that this person was trying to make that bomb and got successfully the components to do that. Thankfully, those IEDs, which had remote triggers, did not go off, or else there would have been a lot more carnage and destruction than he already was able to pull off. But that's been the problem we've seen with this entire national security team of President Biden's. They wanted to cozy up to Iran. They wanted to try to reinvoke that deal. They let the Middle East devolve into chaos, and they focused on parents at school board meetings, at Catholics that happen to enjoy the Latin Mass as their part of their liturgy. They didn't go after the real targets that needed to be by our intelligence community. That's why you need Attorney General Pam Bondi, Kash Patel at the director of the FBI, Tulsi Gabbard at the director of National Intelligence, and Pete Hegseth as the Secretary of Defense. We've got to get those people confirmed and their deputies, as you always remind us, because the danger of the bureaucracy continuing, we're going to see worse things happen if we don't get this cleaned up.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if we don't get their deputies in place, their chosen politically appointed deputies that have to go through confirmation as well, and their confirmation is usually quicker, it's usually done in like three or four or five at a time, you know really that you're walking into the fire on day one when you're walking in without any of your deputies actually being confirmed. And we saw that from everything from HUD to Department of Justice, to the Russia investigation. It happened inside the White House. It happened to Mike Flynn. There was no one around to protect them. There was no one standing in place. And that's because they were reliant on the bureaucracy to do what political appointees are there to do. And I hope every one of these nominees who wasn't around 4 years ago goes back and learns that history. And you are very careful when you enter that office and basically do everything you can not to have to make major decisions. Watch who you're telling people about, talking to people about, until you start getting your actual team in place, which is the job of the U.S. Senate right now. That's their next job. Confirm these nominees, confirm their deputies, so that the government can function and we can drain the swamp of Washington, D.C. We're working on it now. Go to ACLJ.org and support that work. Now, welcome back to Secular. We've got some calls coming in. 1-800-684-3110. And Logan, as you said, we are on a new network through our friends at Salem today. Tell people about that.
Yeah, we are launched today live on the Salem News
Channel.
That's the
big difference. We've been on.
We have been on, but delayed. Now we are live, so you can watch us at noon Eastern time and work your way back from there, and with a great lineup of other hosts on the Salem News Channel. So go check them out. I think it's available on Pluto. It's available on a few other options, but of course on their website as well. But Jack is calling from Pennsylvania. First caller from the Salem News Channel. Go ahead, Jack.
My question is, today, of course, the president is to be, President Trump is to be certified.
Yes.
In what ways and how likely is it that the Democrats are going to try to bollocks things up for the president and make things difficult for his certification?
Well, I mean, we know that many Democrats probably will try to object. I mean, this is not new. Democrats have been objecting to Republican presidents for decades. I mean, George W. Bush had many people try to block the certification.
But it's a bit of a show.
It's only insurrection when it was people on the right doing it. Yes, I assume there will be especially far left members of Congress today that try to block the certification. It begins, they gavel in about 22 minutes from now, right after this show ends live. And so we'll be keeping an eye on it. There's that famous clip from Jamie Raskin before the announcement of the Supreme Court decision where he said it's up to us, it's up to Congress to block this. He has since said he doesn't expect there to be an objection to it moving forward. I think it's also hard when you see how overwhelming both popular vote and electoral college that President Trump won. But there is still rhetoric coming out of our current president that if it were on the other side would be taken as violent rhetoric, as trying to stir up something. Fortunately, there is a massive snowstorm in D.C., so I don't think there's even going to be public protests.
They have about 10
inches of snow. But let's go ahead and listen to President Biden just yesterday being asked by a reporter if he still thinks President Trump is a threat to democracy. Let's play bite one.
Do you still believe he's a threat to democracy?
I think what he did was a genuine threat to democracy.
So President Trump, genuine threat to democracy, a day before the Congress, Jordan, is about to certify President Trump's election. I think, if anything, that shows that democracy can work in the United States.
Look at their words. I mean, as we get closer, and we are getting very close to President Trump becoming the next president of the United States, their rhetoric is going to get nastier. They're going to get more angry. They're going to look for more targets. I think that's why you talk about the nominees. You talk about the individuals who are going to be put forward as cabinet secretaries, directors, at the top level who have got to get confirmed. That Democrats are going to pick and choose those they want to go to war with and make an issue of. And that's not so outside the norm. I think it is pretty outside the norm for the former president, a current president who's about to be the former president, to call the incoming president still a danger. Yeah. Because those kind of words evoke action. Like, something has to still be done to prevent a dangerous person from being president of the United States. And I believe that that kind of rhetoric is not what we need after we've seen this president who has been shot at, as we know, twice, two attempted assassinations that we know of, one that actually he was shot. We know about the issues. We've seen some of the chaos in just recently. We see the attacks in New Orleans. I want a president going in who's focused 100% on making sure that we're safe in our own country, that our allies respect us, our enemies fear us, and it has the team in place to start getting the policies done. And that we on the outside can look at some of these issues and fight back and push back. But as President Trump has said, and even his attorneys have said, he should not have to be thinking about sentencing on the Friday, January 10th, when he's preparing right now to become commander-in-chief.
Yeah, I think safety is that number one. I think it's moved even above the economy for a lot of people because you've seen these terrorist attacks happen. You've seen all this. We feel unsafe. Where he is, it feels out of control. So if President Trump wants to win over the country once again, which, I mean, he did in the Electoral College and in the popular vote, but if he wants to win over everyone else, I believe he can do that simply. I mean, it's not simply, but by making us feel like a safe country once again. And look, this comes after we haven't even done a show since Mike Johnson was confirmed. It was about to happen as we were going off the air on Friday, and we saw him in the first ballot take it.
Yes, yeah, that's unusual. I mean, so in the first ballot, he was able to put through, there were three holdouts. I needed two to move. Two did move, and that was it. I mean, I think that was a good showing for what the Republican House is going to be able to do. I think the Republican Senate is pretty unified as well. And so you get President Trump in, and listen, you've got people talk about a lot about the first 100 days, but it's the first 2 years before all of the House has to go up for re-election, and a third of the U.S. Senate has to go up for re-election. So they're not in Washington as much, and they have to start taking more, they have to think about their votes in a more political nature because they're being watched and tracked by their own constituents. Not that they aren't always, but they're going to be the ones in the news because they're up for re-election. That, for the House members, that's all of them. For the Senate, though, that's a third. So you take this time right now. People talk about that first 100 days. Don't get bogged down with a Jim Comey. Don't get bogged down with investigations. Get in there and get legislation done.
I do see some comments coming in. I want to get to Will's thoughts on that. But I see some comments coming in, people that are watching, and they see the headline about Trudeau, and we haven't brought that back up. So people are curious what happened and where we are. And it was this morning, right before we went on air, he went out, made a statement essentially saying, and Trudeau's pretty much saying, I am resigning, effective when they've picked a new leader, but he is not going to be prime minister anymore, probably within the next few months.
That's right. So his statement was that he's resigning as the leader of their party, so effective immediately, and will resign as prime minister once that party leader has been chosen. Now, that means they have suspended the parliament until March 24th. They were supposed to come back later this month, but this will allow time for their party to pick a new leader. So it's almost like they're in a stalemate in Canada right now. Like, not much is going to happen until this new leader is picked. So when it's some people I know are saying it's like he didn't resign, he has laid out the red carpet for his resignation while he is still technically prime minister. So there is a leader of Canada until that happens. The moment they are able to get together and get a new leader in that party,
right,
he is still the prime minister. And then the Conservatives have already signaled they will go for a no confidence vote as soon as they come back in March 24th, which will then trigger an election if successful.
General election.
Yeah. And so then even that new parliamentary leader, that new prime minister of Canada, may be very short-lived depending on when that election takes place in Canada. So it could be a Conservative prime minister this spring coming up. So hopefully that catches everyone up.
Yeah, but I just wanted to update that.
To the other point where we've been talking about all of the chaos that people were predicting around the Mike Johnson vote, it did end up being in that first round because they held the vote open until those two changed their mind. But what I think people should also be reminded of, you brought up the midterms are always looming for the members of the House. I think they should be very careful in this first 100 days, really even first 6 months to a year of this Trump presidency, that the people gave a mandate to President Trump. If you are going to fiddle around too much with the process, right, and try to get that little bit of extra when there's a clear mandate, if you're holding out when President Trump clearly gave his endorsement behind Mike Johnson and you still had to have your 15 minutes of fame on TV, you had to be the two that were hold out and were so easily flipped, but so that your name was read or maybe you got some concession from the Speaker of the House. Now's not the time to do that. Remember, your election is coming up. You're going to start campaigning. I mean, you're already starting to raise funds for your midterm election if you're in the House. And don't think that people will not remember that you were the person that held up the America First agenda. If you're a Republican, if you start trying to get cute and play with the rules and try to get a little bit something extra or get your name on TV, that's not going to help you when it comes to your constituents that probably, if especially if you're a Republican, just overwhelmingly sent President Trump back to the White House. And some of these conservative members of Congress had a much tougher job getting back into the House than President Trump did getting back into the White House. So remember that when you're trying to decide what to do here coming up.
Yeah, but hey, we got a minute left of this segment, but we're going to come back and we want to take all the calls we can. So if you have a statement, a comment, or question on whether it's Trudeau or whether it's Trump sentencing or the certification of the election or the inauguration coming up, give us a call right now. We'd love to hear from you or anything. Any issues you may have, 1-800-684-3110. Again, 1-800-684-3110. So give us a call. It's a great time. We got a few lines open. Perfect time to call in, but also a perfect time to sign our new petition. Over 150,000 of you have already. We'd love to hit 200,000. Scan the QR code on your screen right now, or just go to aclj.org or aclj.org/sign. And if you can't call in right now, you can put a comment in on YouTube or on Rumble. And if you don't know what to comment, let me know where you're watching from. Maybe we have some Canadian viewers. But just let us know, though, where you are watching the show from. We always love to see that in the comments. So do that today and do it right now. Again, support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. Your call is coming up, 1-800-684-3110.
Secular. We are taking calls. There's a couple about up, so we'll get to those. 1-800-684-3110. So the election will be certified today on Capitol Hill, snowy Washington, D.C. Again, I don't think that that will, I'm sure they'll show some of that. It is the election certification, and you might get some speeches from some liberals around this trying to evoke what happened 4 years ago. Yeah. But the truth is, I think the country has moved on.
And you may not want to hear from her. I understand that. But Kamala Harris put out a video this morning about the certification. I think we should hear it and go to it just because I think it's interesting for people to see the rhetoric now coming out. You know, a month ago, 2 months ago, this was Hitler. We were dealing with Hitler.
Literal fascists.
Literal fascists. But take a listen to the video that came out this morning from Vice President Kamala Harris.
The peaceful transfer of power is one of the most fundamental principles of American democracy. As much as any other principle, it is what distinguishes our system of government from monarchy or tyranny. Today at the United States Capitol, I will perform my constitutional duty as Vice President of the United States to certify the results of the 2024 election. This duty is a sacred obligation, one I will uphold, guided by love of country, loyalty to our Constitution, and my unwavering faith in the American people. As we have seen, our democracy can be fragile, and it is up to then each one of us to stand up for our most cherished principles and to make sure that in America, our government always remains of the people, by the people, and for the people. May God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
So that's a statement that came out this morning here on January 6th, the day that the election will be certified. It has to be certified, and I believe it's only the second time in recent history where the person who lost has to certify the election. So I believe it happened to Al Gore
had to do that. Yeah.
Al Gore had to do it.
So. Interesting. Yeah, that's right, because he was Mike Pence was not the presidential candidate.
No.
When he did his vice presidential candidate. Yeah. So that's interesting to point that out. I do think, again, it makes their rhetoric hollow, which I think most people knew. I think a lot of it was driving violence against President Trump and also to see if they could build some, I don't know, new grassroots movement that they were really lacking in that election. But the truth is, if you really believed it was a fascist and a Nazi,
you wouldn't be making these statements.
Not only would you not be making these statements today, you'd say, go have someone else do it today. I'm out.
Well, it's kind of like you look at the situation. You may not agree with it. President Trump didn't show up till the last inauguration of Joe Biden because he was contesting the results of the election. So if you truly believe that there were issues with the election, you wouldn't show up and be there. Today, it feels like a similar situation where it's like, of course she's showing up because it's just political talk. It was just political rhetoric the whole time. Let's go ahead and take a phone call. Let's go to Charles, who is watching in North Dakota. You're on the air, Charles.
Yes, good morning. Or good morning, I guess it is.
For you.
I just was curious about what you might think about the appellate court stepping in and preventing Judge Marchand from sentencing Trump on the 10th, I think it is. What do you think of that? It seems like that would really do. If the appellate court would come in, I don't even know if they can do that, but I'm just asking, what do you think about that?
Well, President Trump is going to file before sentencing, so that we know that. Whether or not they will come in or not before that, that will be the remain to be seen. Usually it would be post-sentencing, but before the sentencing was carried out. So you would then, but this time around, they're challenging whether or not the sentencing is even proper because of the case on immunity out of the Supreme Court.
That's right, Jordan. And in that filing that we referenced earlier where they asked Marchand to not move forward with the sentencing on Friday, they make reference that, and they gave a deadline basically to the judge saying, if we want to hear from you by 2 p.m. today, so 2 p.m. Eastern time today, on whether or not you will cancel that sentencing. If not, we are going to then file an appeal asking for a stay of the sentencing proceeding while the other issues are appealed out at the appeals court. Once again, I do think, personally, I feel like that's a little bit of a long shot that Judge Marchand is going to find a way to continue forward and that the appeals court may not want to weigh into that and just let President Trump appealed the sentencing, especially since the judge has already signaled that it's going to be that unconditional discharge. That's what he wrote, that he sees that as the best path forward. He said he's put aside the fears of there being jail time. So I don't think that the judge is trying to create a full constitutional crisis, but is trying to still get that last word in there of saying, you're a convicted felon, no punishment really, let's move on, appeal, whatever, get it out of my court. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah. I mean, I think, listen, we are, the ultimate reality is they would like to use this to try and utilize it against President Trump as a political phrase, you know, convicted felon. But let's just be honest. He won with all of that.
Yeah, overwhelmingly
hanging over his head.
Yep, overwhelmingly won. And of course, as we wrap up, we do need to address the Presidential Medal of Freedom that was announced. There's a big list of people. Of course, the ones that are getting the most attention are both Hillary Clinton, and of course, you couldn't have done it without George Soros. So if you wanted to spin people out of control,
Soros was actually there, right?
He was there,
I thought his son was there.
Was he? I'm not sure exactly. I believe George Soros, so on the list. And then you had other people, your Bonos, your Bill Nye, the science guy, Messi.
Bill Nye.
But then posthumous.
Messi was not there, right?
I didn't believe I saw him, so I don't think so.
You think he didn't even know what this was?
I love Messi. He's the greatest soccer player of all time. But like,
were they thinking because he like took the MLS to another level?
There's a whole thing with the UNICEF and some of the work he's done for charities. But posthumously, you had RFK Sr., Robert F. Kennedy, and you had a George Romney, posthumously.
That's
so
why Mitt was there.
Mitt Romney accepted it on behalf of George Romney, and it was George Soros' son, who we've seen in photos with every liberal elite recently.
He runs a political
right. He
fund.
Did receive
George
it on
Soros
behalf
is a
of
very
his father.
Old man, yeah.
So it was definitely utilizing the Presidential Medal of Freedom to give a final farewell of we don't like you conservatives by doing all of these. They politicized the Presidential Medal of Freedom right here at the end.
Yeah, about half of them are like understandable. You have a Michael J. Fox who's done a lot for charity work. Sure. You have Magic Johnson, Jane Goodall. You kind of look at those lists. Even Bill Nye the Science Guy, you may not agree with him, but you're like, okay, at least he's done something. Bono, you know, who's been involved in every sort of charity.
Ralph Lauren. I mean, those that are into big fashion.
Big brand.
Yeah.
Well, he's done a lot also for like cancer research and some of these other people. But when you throw a George Soros in there, and then you throw an RFK Sr. and then a Romney, it does feel, like you said, like another moment where the Biden administration decided, let's just plant some more conspiracies. Let's tick some more people off right here at the last second.
Well, you know, I mean, Mitt Romney's not going to be there anymore, so he's, not going to be in the U.S. Senate. And then you got Soros didn't even come.
In 95,
And you've got RFK Jr. joining the Trump administration.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that was RFK Jr. there. I don't think he got to accept it on behalf of his father. I don't know. All right. Well, if you want to stop this political prosecution. You can do it right now. Go to aclj.org/sign. Scan the QR code. Do it right now. 150,000 of you have already. Let's get that up to 200,000. We really would love it. We'll be back tomorrow. Hey, and thank you for watching. If you're watching on Salem News Channel, we'll be here each and every day at noon Eastern. So you can find us live there along with another great cast of hosts that do great shows on that network. So we're excited to be part of the Salem News Channel live feed now. So thank you so much. Again, aclj.org/sign. Do it right now. Support the work if you can. Become an ACLJ champion, a monthly recurring member. We would really appreciate it. Back tomorrow.